Okay, we're gonna get started, we've got a lot of images. We've got a lot of images to go through and we think we've got the computer finally on track. It was acting up like we've never noticed before. I'm Richard Kemmerer and this is my aide de camp, my son Matt. And it is not like he does all the technology kind of stuff and I do all the art stuff. It isn't like that at all. He does all the technology and some of the art stuff. And I do the rest, okay? At any rate, how many of you have been in here before while we've been doing this? Oh, gosh. Looking for punishment. Now, who hasn't seen these yet? Oh, well, great. I want to share one thing just to introduce you to the relationship between art and faith. You know what this is, right? Or where this is? Sistine Ceiling. Artist is... Oh, you're good. And depicted here on the right is God's hand, active, strong. On the left, Adam, wussy. At any rate, Michelangelo was looking for some kind of an arrangement with these two figures, and he came up with, this is not it. He came up with Adam and Christ. Their fingers were touching in the original. Can you see that? That finger goes all the way over so that they were kissing there. And Michelangelo came back later and retouched the whole thing. Not the whole thing, just that area, because he had heard a hymn. And the hymn translated into the sevenfold gifts of grace are thine, O finger of the hand divine. Now the sevenfold gifts are the gifts of the Holy Spirit. So that finger extension, that space between Adam and God is the Holy Spirit. Michelangelo actually was a very capable theologian, and here he hits a high mark, because today the Holy Spirit connects us with God daily. Okay, so that's our start. The problem is, what we learn is, what you don't see is as important as what you do. Makes it easy on the artist, I guess, because I don't have to do anything. It's what you don't see that's going to do it. No, we're going to show you things to see that probably you haven't seen before. All right. Let's go. We're going on into the Passion Week.
Mm-hmm. So these are going to be the hard ones.
Okay. We're starting with the toughest ones, really. We ended, I think, maybe one of our last sessions with the flight into Egypt and the little kids that were coming on Christmas Eve to church and seeing the creche, and there's Mary in the doorway saying, hello, welcome, kids, all of that. Well, that is a Canadian artist who I have come to learn about and really love. He had his real serious problems on his psyche. He wound up in a psychiatric ward in Paris, I think it was. He was converted to Christianity and came back and devoted an awful lot of his output to a Christian theme, okay? While we are with this artist in the psychiatric ward, I should let you know that probably 90% of all artists belong in one. I don't mean that their behavior is bad or anything of that sort, but the process of deciding, out of all the things you can pick to represent this, you finally settled on this. That's the choices you make. That art is a process of continually making choices, finally deciding, and then realizing that there were still choices out there that you hadn't seen. That messes with your head. They contend that about 90% of all artists are actually ADHD. Okay? That kind of thing. I don't know what I am.
And I only do a little bit of the arts.
Okay, I confess. All right, so we're going to take this guy that gave us all the delight, all the sweetness, all that almost fun kind of thing, and he is going to take us into the Garden of Gethsemane and winds up with this. Jesus praying, and he has just turned himself twisted by the agony that he's going through already. Okay? The kiss, okay? The kiss of betrayal. Okay. Let's jump to another artist.
Did you ever say who that artist was?
Kurelek.
It was, okay.
Yeah. Those two first ones, Kurelek. K-U-R-E-L-E-C. After they see Kurelek for the first time, they stop me at breakfast the next morning and ask, how do you spell Kurelek? You know, because they want to investigate. He is one of the heroes of Canadian art. We didn't think that there was such a thing until Kurelek came along. And every year when the new Canada calendars come out onto the market, there is one calendar devoted to the work of Kurelek. He is very Canadian in his subject matter. Okay. Goya, Spanish, and we are capturing, or if you will, arresting Christ. They are taking him away. I love the whole thought of virtually every country, Russia, China, Africa, all these countries, sometime in their history, confronted Christ and made images involving his life. This is West Africa. Everything is done in the manner of how it would be done in West Africa. We see this, the fellow isn't kneeling. He should be kneeling. You know, in another split second, this guy who has his hands folded is gonna whack this guy and make him on his knees. The knees in West Africa, kneeling is the ultimate sign of respect. And this fellow is addressing Pontius Pilate. Okay? How many of you have had any background in art? In art history? Or, okay, who's this? Yeah, I don't want you to tell. Don't hush. No, you know all of this. Anybody want to guess? Rembrandt, yeah, you said it. Good. Rembrandt, who was, we cannot even spend 5 days on just Rembrandt and do a complete job. There's a book in the library of his drawings. It's about that thick. 4 drawings on every page. It's just an amazing mass of work. a big portion of which is really important and inventive in the ways that he approaches his subject matter. The arrest of Christ. Okay. I almost weep every time I see this because it's the face of the Christ. I gotta hold this so I can actually pronounce this guy's name. He's from West Africa too. Haoundounsi. Haoundounsi, and this is his depiction of the Ecce Homo, or behold the man. The behold the man scenario occurs when you got to decide between Christ or the criminal, the other guy, the bad guy, and you come down on Christ. He's the one we're going to sacrifice. And so he is brought to the front of the crowd, and Pilate says, in his language, behold the man. Right? That's the scenario. And the artist has given us an incredible, sad, moving, deeply felt Christus in his own country's image.
This is wood. Wooden.
That's wood. That's wood. Yeah. The Africans, I love it. We lived in Uganda for a couple of years under Idi Amin and stuff, but I taught at the art school there, and the woodworkers were ahead of everybody else. Everything else almost seemed like it was not natural to Africa, like painting on canvas and things like that. And wood, they were doing that all their lives. And so the wood stuff from Africa really, really surprises you with how elegant, how beautifully it's crafted. You got it, Ruo? Oh, good on you. That's great. That makes my job so much easier. Ruo, who was totally discouraged, being ADHD as he was, took almost all of his work at one time, at the end of one of his most fruitful periods, took it all and burned it. Took it all and destroyed it, and the reason he gave for destroying it was not because it wasn't good enough, but that people just wouldn't understand. And that's probably true, but come on, George, you got to give us a shot. Let us try anyway. But this is his Ecce Homo. You'll find his, for good reason, although he never did it, a lot of artists were given permission to translate his paintings into stained glass, mainly because of his really rich black. And this could easily translate into stained glass. It isn't here, but you'll see a lot of the church at Assy, for example, in France, has beautiful windows designed by Ruol and translated. Okay? You can't tell me, can you? Did I give you too much here? I think I did give you too much, but not because you don't know the name. Oh, come on, we got a ringer in the group here. It's Hieronymus Bosch. And what we learn from Hieronymus Bosch in this painting of people spitting on Jesus and poking him and so forth, is that the bad guys at this time were Arabs. Okay? Or Turks. If you want to hear some things nasty about Turks, read Luther. They are the source of all evil in our time. Okay, so These are Turks. You can tell by the little thing. He's got he's either a Turk or a biker. I think he's a Turk. Here we are back to Kuralek again. Ouch. Oh my. These paintings form a large display in a museum of his work, very close on the Canadian side to Niagara Falls. There is a wall that is solid, this set of the Passion of Christ. Chock-a-block, one right after the other. About as high as that wall right there. 3 foot by 3 foot. And if you can get close to one, it just, you either weep or you laugh. That's ADHD. You just go from one thing to another. And you gotta weep here.
What's his medium?
Oil.
Oil on canvas?
On canvas, yeah. Here it is. Yeah. Not always, but yeah, here it is. Okay. Anybody, or some of you, I'm not even going to ask. You're too smart. You're not leaving me with anything to say. Who? Oh, you want this pointer?
I've been there.
Of course. How many have been here? The chapel at Assi. This is a chapel that was designed for Matisse. And he did this is late in his life. He would die shortly after completing this. His last years, he was totally crippled up. Everything was curling in on itself. He had a lot of trouble walking. So when he did this, and this set right here, are all the Stations of the Cross, okay? And Matisse had his wheelchair wheeled up, and he had an assistant tie his brush to the end of a bamboo pole. And the way he painted made it look almost like a fisherman, because he had to hold the end of it into his gut and just gradually move that thing around on the tip of the brush that had to be 4 yards away. Okay? Shaky, but profound. And over here, you have got a nativity with flout. The strange thing about this is that it's black and white. I think it may be the only thing Matisse did in black and white except figure studies. He was a colorist. He just loved big splashes of color. But he designed that, he designed that, which is like he loved North Africa, spent a lot of time there, and he did a grill work door here, the entrance to the confessional. All right, and over here, we haven't got it, but he is the old Matisse, big splashes of very simple choices of color and very abstract, but signs of life and growth. It's an amazing, the whole building is white. It's an amazing gift that he's left us. Okay. Here's a guy you haven't heard of. Oh, or have you? Come on. Anybody? I'll give you a clue. England, 20th century. This guy, nobody knows this guy. And primarily, oh, you talk about ADHD. This guy was a total flake. And had to be dear. Just, I would love to have painted next to him. because he was having a lot of fun, even on really serious stuff. This is Christ carrying his cross through the artist's village. Okay? And the guy's name is Stanley Spencer. Stanley Spencer. And a real strange character. They said, well, I was talking about him when I was in England last, and one lady said, I lived right next to him. He was a little scary because he kept pushing all of his supplies and canvases right through my yard on a baby carriage. So there you got Stanley going to work. This is his village, and there are guys carrying crosses, or carrying ladders, rather, in the processional to get Christ up and down from the cross. Yeah, you gotta need ladders. Where are you gonna find ladders? The local firefighters. All these are firefighters in uniform carrying ladders behind Jesus, who is carrying this cross. Okay?
I also wanted to point out that... I'm not sure if it's coincidence, but I doubt it, that all of the drapes are blowing out at the exact same angles, and so are those... angels?
Yeah.
It's just lightly implied.
Is that maybe what he thinks of his neighbors, of his little village? We should remind him that they didn't think this of him, but that's a whole other story. Just beautiful. Oh, the Turks are back. Bosch, he painted nightmares. And they were packed with all kinds. He would do Jesus on the way to the cross, and for the life of you, got so many people in there, and you can't find him. You can't. Which one of all those people is Jesus? And Bosch is telling you, this was a maddening crowd. This was total chaos. In the cosmos, this was chaos. So he painted it.
And he didn't draw beautiful people.
No. The Turks. Well, we know some really good-looking Turks, but Bosch evidently didn't. No, this is Bosch's nightmare. Yeah, and it's so packed that you almost forget that in spite of all the chaos going around, he's almost asleep while he's carrying his cross. He's probably numb from having been tortured.
And the character of the picture is so different from the other caricatures.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Good comment.
Is that Mary to the left? The very serene-looking woman in the light?
Is that Veronica with the...
This is Veronica. Good job. Boy, we got a good group. And here is the veil. You know the story of Veronica, most of you? Veronica was one of the women that stopped Jesus. Jesus, on his way to the cross, met his mother and other women, of which, according to pious tradition, Veronica was one. And she... wiped his face on a piece of fabric that she had. She just blotted all the blood that was streaming into his eyes and everything, and it left an imprint on her handkerchief. And this is a part of it. There is the imprint.
Oh.
You see?
Yes.
There it is. And she's honoring the picture. It's the history of Veronica is really a little strange. How many of you are familiar with the word Veronica in Spain? The Veronica is when the bullfighter has his handkerchief out, it happens to be red, and he is doing a one of those. That's called a Veronica.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of information you really didn't need. And it's really, all I do is tell you these things from time to time so that if you can remember them, you will impress your friends. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Next. Now, here is Matthew's work and mine in our collaboration. You have books around here. Matthew and I did
over 600.
Over 600 images for bulletin covers. For the Canadian Lutheran Church, and we have them scattered around. You may just want to do them, want to take a peek. Every now and then, we got so excited about a set that we put them all together so that they created another image. Probably the one that does that most dramatically is when we did this series. They put all the bulletins together.
Oh.
Can you find him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
See him in there?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is, the bulletins are the life of Christ.
There were actually 52 Sundays in the year, but we added Holy Week and Christmas Eve so we could get 54, have that 9x6 grid, and give the people an excuse not to throw them away when they want them.
It was kind of interesting when you made the whole thing, just turn them around and put them together, and you'll make another thing. We'd have calls like, "Kemmer, have you got an extra one? We've run out." And what's the problem? Well, this lady went on vacation and she called back her friends and said, "Save me a bulletin because we use them in our hospital." You know, so they were making a big thing, and she didn't want a hole in the middle of it. So that's kind of neat.
And after a few years of doing these together, it came to the point where we said, okay, another crucifixion. How do we make it fresh? Mm-hmm. And so we came up with the dialogue series. So there were actually two images for each Sunday, for each gospel. And we had to do that by determining what the subject was in a particular scripture, and then what the subject saw. So this was actually in a very small image on the back of the bulletin, along with explanation and lessons, etc. And what does Christ see? He could see a number of different things. He could be seeing his resurrection. He could be seeing... Put your imagination on, he could be seeing a number of different things.
Got to come down somewhere, because they're waiting for the designs at the publishing house. You know? Really, really. We have to have the whole thing before the year starts. All 54 have to be done before the year starts. That's what Christ sees.
That's the shadow of the cross he sees?
Yeah. The shadow of the cross, the sponge coming out.
Laughing, crying, wondering, one woman holding up her baby.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But we did this, one of the main reasons we did this was to introduce to people that there's a rich opportunity for imaging that we haven't really explored in terms of what the subject is seeing. Because we're accustomed to imaging the subject itself.
Now, this may be hard for you to do because you care for your reputation and stuff, but when you get the idea that art participates in a conversation, that there is dialogue going back, even if the dialogue from you is not spelled out, the dialogue begins with the art, and now what are you saying back to it? You know, now if you can get accustomed to saying things in your mind, don't say it too loud. People will begin to wonder. But think about who you are in relation to this image. And you have your own given permission to say, it doesn't say anything to me. I am not where that is. Maybe later. Okay? So, that there is continual dialogue.
Is the spear in this one?
Pardon?
Keep looking for the spear.
It's holding up the sponge.
No, the
bigger spear.
The spear, not the sponge.
They're
both.
Well, you see his face up there? He's looking over the spear.
Okay. Okay. I just thought maybe I was missing something, but.
But yeah, you were. Intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I
don't know. I think it was a good answer.
It was a good enough answer.
He's looking over.
This is important. This is important to us. This is important to Matt and me. This is important to Art and the Church. This is Matthias Grunewald, Matthias der Maler, Matthias the painter. Grunewald meaning green woods. We named our art program, which we founded 30 years ago. I can't believe that. And we named it Grunewald. I have to tell you that I have an older son who, when he first saw this and knew that we were going to name it Grunewald, he said, I got a great idea for a mailbox. This is my son. And I said, okay, what? Just draw it up and we'll see whether it works. What he drew up was this. Just hang the box on the end of the finger. Yeah. No. We really need to encourage that kind of thinking. I wanted to try it, but my wife prevailed. Thank the Lord. Okay, yeah, it is so many things. But before it is anything else, it is German. Now, I don't know what that means to you, but to me, it means energy. There's always some kind of energy. Look at Mary's. Not everything is in proper proportion. But if you look at Mary Magdalene down there in the nice outfit and the long hair, she has already brought something down to put Jesus. To put on Jesus when he's buried, some ointment in a jar. But look at the action in her. Her hands, they're shivering and leaving a kind of wake of light in their path. There are funny things happening, like that little lamb. But you see it as funny now. We're gonna see a little lamb down the road and you'll be amazed. What John is saying, and this is a historical mistake, John the Baptist having been dead for a while, but he has returned and has said something out of Scripture. The words are in the crotch of his arm, as he must increase, so I must decrease. Okay? And the rest of this is almost like Kurelek. Okay? This is part of a large painting. The Isenheim altarpiece is very complex. The Isenheim altarpiece, all the paintings put together, is 17 feet high. It's huge, enormous. You know what I mean? I mean, he is still bleeding And if you looked at the whole thing, we won't bring it up again, you'll find that all the fluid in his body has gone down his legs and is in his feet. They're just, they're not even shapes. They're globs. His feet are. And you've got the whips that the soldiers took to him have left thorns and bits, particles of wood in his body.
But this is also in a hospital.
Yeah, I don't understand that. The original of this was for a hospital. There's good news, but it's in another painting next to this.
But what he's also suffering from, along with the whips and all that, is the ailment that the hospital was for, is St. Anthony's Fire.
Yeah, St. Anthony's Fire is... There's even a portrait of St. Anthony in the whole big thing. He just defined this as St. Anthony's Fire because of the commission, but they didn't expect him to pull out the sore, which was part of a thing, of a movement of disease that went all over Europe. And it was a killer disease, thought to be caused by moldy rye in the monk's bread. Yeah. Well, speaking of monks, this is St. Francis's cross. This is the cross that hung in the monastery where St. Francis taught and lived. This cross is not by him or for him. It was already there, and it moved him so much that he even gave it credit for some of his theology. It just spoke to him and actually ordered him to behave in this way or that. Be generous, this cross told Anthony. I'm sorry. Be kind. Give your stuff away.
Was this a chapel that he first went to?
Yes.
To rebuild?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. A number of times, actually. Mm-hmm. This I show you so that you know that Luther was here. Don't ask me how he got in there. And worse than that is the guy next to him, who is Lucas Cranach, the artist of the Reformation, who is now painting his own self-portrait next to Luther. That's
they were friends.
And then, he painted Luther at the Last Supper, and Luther is all over the place. Cranach, needless to say, was Luther. This is Polissinic. Many things happening simultaneously, although they originally happened in sequences. So you've got Christ victorious over here, dead here. Didn't we track that down, Matthew? He is squirting blood right on top of Cranach. That is chutzpah. That is nasty. That is just nasty.
He's got it on the back.
What's it underneath the feet?
I'm wondering who this guy is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he ran away naked. Martin.
Ran away naked.
Oh.
From the, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There. I apologize. Everything bad I said. Well, no. But some things I said bad about Cranach, I take back. This is Christ literally being victorious over death. Literal. I would not like to live with this.
Is that Peter with Luther and Cranach?
Is who?
Is it Peter or who is that with
Chronic? That could, no, it's not one of the disciples. They all ran away.
Who's
all the disciples ran away, leaving nothing behind but Luther and Chronic. What kind of theology is this?
So what's isn't the little group that looks like they have tablets at the back?
The what?
There's a little group of people that look, and it looks like they have Braille right there.
Right there.
Oh, is that Moses with the
tablets? They're bringing the law. They are bringing the law because this is fulfilling it.
Oh, okay.
The guy's carrying bread, so.
I think it's Paul.
Yeah, he's teaching.
The one next to the egotistical artist, I think that's Paul. No,
the guy.
Bread. Yeah.
This guy with the bread on?
Yeah.
Well, what's the bread guy?
I don't think so.
He's carrying bread.
Melanchthon?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
You got the two fingers down below, pointing down.
Yeah, that may be with the lamb.
Pointing to the lamb.
Hold the lamb. It would be one of a kind. Usually you can find these portraits repeated in certain ways, allowing one artist to give you a little hint about how things should proceed. And that would be like a Paul that... In fact, the Bible description of Paul is that he was kind of weaselly. He was short and... you women might agree with this because he didn't treat women very nice in his epistles. Well, let's move on. Michelangelo. Spanish. The Spanish people exuded penitence. Penitence was high on their list of worship. And they also took a long time in displaying a kind of homage, their masses. I don't know how, anybody been to Spain? Anybody go to church in Spain and stuff, see that? Yeah. Yeah, Santiago de Compostela, we went, took a group of people and did a pilgrimage. It's a long pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela. And you know how in Catholic things they have little incense that they swing around? At Santiago, they have a 10-gallon bucket. And it isn't even a 10-gallon, it's huge. It's enormous. They call it the gigante, the giant. And it's about that big, and it hangs from a rope from the ceiling, and it takes 8 monks to get that thing to start swinging. And it goes from one side to the other, not down the aisle, the other direction, okay? And I'll tell you, when you go to San Diego, you want to sit in one of those side aisle chapels, because when that thing comes whooshing down, letting out fire and smoke and coming, you know, and swinging up over your head, it is so neat. Why would they go to the bother? Because this was a pilgrimage destination. And when the pilgrims came and didn't have money to spend on a motel, they parked themselves in the upper level of the cathedral. And I don't know how your feet feel after walking maybe 40 miles, but there was a slight aroma after miles and miles and hundreds of pilgrims in one little crowded space. Get out the big one. So they were worshipful. They were kind of dramatic. And they were very practical. Okay. Don't want to spend a lot of time. This I did while we were living in Uganda, and I had heard that my father had been removed from the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, along with his friends in the seminary in St. Louis, the Lutheran Seminary in St. Louis. And so I did this. These were all done on scrap wood or woodcuts. And this one is the crucifix and bystanders. This is the crucifix and the dancer. This is the crucifix and the bound minister, who was my father. Just experimenting, I'm just trying to find out if Christ were dying and were executed, and how would we build a cross? We've got so many, they're all along the road. And maybe just come back. Germaine Richier was a wonderful woman sculptress from France, and she did this for a very important chapel at Assy. Upon seeing it, the men in charge put it away. It is now back where it belongs. The Cathedral of Wells in England tried very hard. They saw all kinds of problems with the Gothic and the pressure on the architecture, that it's going out, you gotta prop it up all the time. And they decided to try this, and it worked. Everybody was just laughing at them, but it worked. They took a Gothic arch and put one on top of the other upside down. So all the pressure, instead of going up and out, now comes down and is supported by another arch beneath it. And inside of that arch, at the base of that arch, they have Mary and John and the crucifixion, which is actually huge when you understand the size of some of these other things there. I love this solution. Mary kissing Jesus' feet, Mary Magdalene kissing Jesus' feet, Mary is over here. The angels are something. These angels, like this one right here, is squeezing the palm of her hand like this, and blood, little drops of blood. She is just like that.
Giotto,
yeah. He is the major introduction to the Renaissance. Giotto bridges the gap between the Gothic and the Renaissance.
Who's breaking through the rock?
Oh, what?
Someone was breaking through the rock in the bottom there, or not?
Oh, someone's going down.
Oh.
Someone's going down. That would be the devil.
All right.
Is that a fresco or a...
Say again?
Is that a fresco or...
It's,
you know,
Padua,
that's a,
isn't it? I think it's at Padua.
Yeah, it's a mix of stuff, and a lot of these things are done directly on walls, not on canvases. And there needs to be a preparation over the surface of a wall before you put on the color, because it'll just suck it up. And so, I think it's probably a combination. Glazes, maybe in oil over a watercolor base, something like that. That happened fairly frequently. We had an icon class at the Guild in 1994. And that summer, we had a major serious fire that started in Chelan and went all the way over across, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of acres between our place and Chelan, but it was coming down the hill there, and we had to get out. Major fire. Well, the icon writer who was conducting the class had a very important, significant icon in his position that he brought to the class as a model. He put the icon on an easel, and he faced it toward the fire. And he said, "She's done it before." She did it again. Yeah, the fire abated. But this was my icon in response to Mary and John and Christ on the cross, getting us out of trouble. Who now? We've seen him. Ruol. Okay.
Oh, you're good. You are so good.
Rembrandt. Now, you got to realize that the original size of this is about... We had a number of images by Dali of this same subject, and we decided on this one. The other one, beautiful too. Dali is a technician. He can paint amazing skill. But the other one had his girlfriend kneeling beside the cross in an immense robe. Beautiful and beautifully done, but we thought this one with the Sea of Galilee down below. The only problem I had with it is somebody said, how could you paint a thing like that as though the artist was looking down from above? And he said the artist was looking down from above. In this painting, I am God the Father. Whoa. Back up, little pushy there. I did this at Valparaiso University, where I was a prof for 22 years, and decided I would do the, it's called crucifixion, but it's with a K. And the reason why I did it is because Valparaiso University outbid the Ku Klux Klan, who wanted it for their headquarters. Yay! So I did a crucifixion for the Klan. All right? And it's not a happy thing. When there was trouble, the Klan would always hang the American flag upside down. And Jesus is not only on the cross is burning. It's a burning cross, okay? So they printed a picture of this in the local paper, and we were immediately beset by the Klan. You will take this down, or we will take it down for you. They hung it in the gallery, and overnight it wound up sliced. Yeah, it got repaired, so it's all right. You can't even tell it. But we found out the guy who sliced it, the chairman of the Lutheran congregation. What? Come on, I am all messed up in my head, you know, about such goings on. But I just thought I'd let you know who you're worshiping with. No. I didn't know that guy, and he didn't know me, but he knew what he needed to do, you know, in order to be faithful to his order, and they could not coexist. Anybody want to guess who this is?
Oh, man.
I was hoping you'd say something else. But you're right. This is Picasso. who does the most abstract, what are you thinking kind of things, and then does the most detailed stuff, like, that's true, but where did you come up with that? And I'm thinking of this. Oh, no. What happened?
Just press whatever you did.
I pushed the wrong button.
There we go.
I pushed the right button.
Yeah.
This.
Yeah.
See that? That is the tossing of the bones for the rope. It is thought, according to pious tradition, that the game they were playing was called the game of life. Huh. Or, as we called it in Uganda, it's a universal thing. In Uganda, it was a board that had things scooped out, little spaces, and you moved and you jumped tea seeds in Uganda.
We called it a mweso.
Mweso, yeah. But it was the game of life in Roman times, and if you lost, you forfeited your life. Okay, so it was for real.
So we had a few people after breakfast looking at this going, okay, we can find the game, we can find the spear, but where the actual body is, so your job to find it.
Yeah, where is Jesus? Where do you think? It's a game. He could be anywhere in here. I think he's white, but I can't prove it. There's not enough there to make me decide. Okay, come on. No? I got no takers? All right. Rubens. Did you say Rubens?
Yeah, but I didn't want to say it out loud. You couldn't tell her any
women. Because
it wasn't
her.
Yeah,
no women.
So I thought maybe.
Yeah, there
is one.
There
is
a couple.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Rubens and Rembrandt lived very close to one another at the same time. And we're going to have a chance to compare the two doing the same subject matter. Chinese crucifixion. I think that is just beautiful. You expect of the Oriental folks some space between focuses, what you focus on. They just love what we call aerial projection. It's like sky or air or the tree of life. Is this Haiti?
This is India.
India. Oh, okay. Thank you. Another tree of life. This is from Canada and is a native of Canada. He's an Indian. And this is remarkable. I thought I had seen everything in this. He is the tree of life. Extra long torso.
But there's a Native American detail in here that's kind of interesting. How many of you have heard, I've heard the owl call my name?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And the owl represents?
Death.
Okay. And death is skewered. So here we have a crucifixion where they are conquering death.
Isn't that profound? Yeah. I mean, you look at it, and on first sight, it's joy and life and happiness, birds, and all of the birds.
What's the artist's name?
Ooh, do we have a name?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we do. Can't pronounce it.
Yeah. Debassy.
Debassiga. D-E-B-A-S-I-G-A. of these, a lot of these in Ireland and
but this is nowhere near as profound as the next one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Take your word.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want, the next time I think the next time I do a series of bulletins, I'm going to go around and get kids to design them. These little people are really good. She, I think it's a she.
Yeah, that's got the
This is a special kind of cross. And if you look at this, this is a special kind of foot treatment, which we'll see shortly. That's a Tao. A Tao cross. She didn't know that. She just put down what she needed in order to make there. The Lamb. Behold the Lamb of God that taketh away the sin of the world. Here is a lamb ready for slaughter. And that just gets me somewhere, you know. That is tough.
Is that an oil painting?
Yes.
By Spanish.
It's just Spanish. So I would guess Velasquez. This is Max Beckmann, a German who fled from Hitler to the United States. I was lucky enough to have him as a teacher. And the only way I got to do that was I could speak German. And so I was kind of a translator student. Probably the toughest depiction of a descent from the cross, where rigor mortis has obviously set in, so it's almost like taking down a big hunk of cardboard. El Greco, yeah, right. Domenico Theodocopoli. He was from originally from Greece, and so we refer to him as El Greco, the Greek, and moved from Greece to Italy. Participated in the Renaissance in Italy, in the burgeoning Renaissance, and then was called to Spain. He lived in Toledo. And in almost every one of his paintings of the crucifix, he has Toledo in the background. And over a period of time, the crucifix gets smaller and smaller, and Toledo begins taking over the entire painting. Okay? Now, can imagine trying to live through all that cycle of crucifixion and Toledo. The combination has been set for this painting.
Who started with the skull at the base of the cross? Where did that come from?
The Bible, I think.
But who started depicting the skull at the base of the cross?
Golgotha was the place of the skull.
Yeah, the mountain was the place of the skull. The mountain.
Or the whatever.
Yeah. But no, I think maybe that's just to illustrate, rather to tell some particular secret about something or not. But I think maybe different artists might have different reasons for putting it in there. One might say, this is where death has been conquered.
Yeah.
Okay.
One church I served, the stained glass window, had that, stands out got a skull there at the base of the cross.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be his reason for putting it.
Yeah.
We keep seeing it show up from early Christian.
Very early on. Yeah. Okay.
Now, after you have seen all of these, you know, it's like this night looks like such a night. This night looks like the earth is giving up its dead. This has been referred to as, pretty accurately, I think, the first Christian landscape. Simply because, in its context, Christ is still in the middle of it.
Now, we have a few more images here regarding the descent from the cross and the Pieta.
We got some time?
Our hour is used up. Now, we could just flash them through so that you can see the...
We'll just keep going, and if you need to go, you know, that's fine. All right? Rubens, descent from the cross. Look at the corpse of Christ, full body, energetic, kind of not floppy at all.
Muscular.
And, big, bold. Down the road, Rembrandt painted this. And if you could see the body, I'm sorry. If you could see the body coming off of this cross, it is sliding. There's no muscular depiction there at all. If we go back, what is the light source here? It's probably upper right, okay, coming down onto it. Next. What is the light source here? It's coming from inside. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it is so good to have one thing to compare. Two different artists, one Catholic and one Protestant. And you can maybe say that's the depiction, but you don't want to get snobby about it. You got two different artists and they see things in different ways. Roger van der Weyden, the whole thing in a box. This painting is recessed in its frame like about a foot, so there's kind of like interesting shadows. Beautifully done. Skull. Flemish. Probably more to the way it was. Christ is dead weight. There are in the history of art hundreds of Pieta. It has never been mentioned as a historical fact in the Bible. We have no idea. This is a made-up thing. It's Mary, primarily, Mary consoling her boy. All right? That's the sense of it. And this is Michelangelo. Suffered some damage. Another Michelangelo. This also suffered some damage. Mary, look at Mary and look at the boy. Mm-hmm. This guy, he must be dead weight, but she could be having tea. She's got her one hand out. She is so relaxed with this thing and carrying his weight. It is an amazing tour de force for the architect. We're talking 24 years old, and he comes up with this. Ooh. Another Pieta carved out of wood. Who? Oh.
It's Kathy Colwitz.
Yeah. Kathy Colwitz.
Is that teakwood?
Huh?
Teakwood?
Could be. Sure looks like it, doesn't it? Colwitz was a, she was a, an amazing artist. Just wonderful. Her series on the death camps. Whew. This is the Pieta of Avignon, which is in the background. Pieta again. Giotto. Mm-hmm. And the angels. Oh, this one in particular is just beside itself. It's just rigid and screaming. This one, look at this. I don't believe it.
Do you know what church that's in?
I will in a minute.
The chapel in Bologna that he did entirely?
It not Bologna. Where are Romeo and Juliet from?
Verona.
Okay. Now, this is...
Titian.
The one before was Van Gogh. Okay. This is... I'd love to tell you. Where did this come from? America. This is from the United States. Yeah. An artist by the name of William Johnson.
Last one.
Oh, there is a last one. Chagall. Okay.